This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Akuzuri is a complex and a difficult sefer. It's written by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and based on a legend which is appears historically to be true. But I call it a legend because we have very little historical fact about it, where a king of the Khuzars was a distant nation somewhere in the mountains in central Europe, near the Russian part of Europe, it appears. And he kept on having a dream. He was a person who tried his best to be righteous, and he kept on having a dream where the Ribbono Shel came to him and said, "Kavanosecha rutsuyim and ma'asecha enam rutsuyim. You've got good intentions, but your ma'asim, your actions are not good enough." Which led him to believe that a philosophy of life is not enough. You need a religion. There's such a thing as an avodah. You've got to have the right actions as well. It's not good enough to have the right intentions. And so he started researching the various religions that were available to find out which of them was emes. And he tried the Muslims and the Christians and various other groups. And in the first part of the Sefer, it very briefly goes through his encounters with them. And he comes to the conclusion at the end of each of those sessions that there's no emes in that. And he finally comes to Talmid Chochem and he questions him about Yiddishkeit, and there he begins to find his answers. And Rabbi Yehuda Halevi wrote the Sefer HaKuzari as a dialogue between the king of the Kuzari, as he imagined the dialogue would have taken place between the king and the Kuzari in the Talmid Chochem, questions and answers. And that's the Sefer. What we're going to do is, we're not going to start at the beginning of the Sefer, because to get into it properly, the Sefer HaKuzari, the easiest thing to start is well into the third section of the Sefer, and to work on that, and then if we want to later on, we can go further forwards and further backwards and cover other parts of the Sefer. But the most important part for us, and the easiest part to get into, is the Maimar Shlishi. It's divided up into several Maimorim. Maimar Shlishi, and we're going to start with Siman Beis on Maimar Shlishi. Mr. Sider, are you okay? Monty, maybe you can move around a little bit, then Mr. Sider can get up to the table, if you don't mind. In Siman Aleph, which is a long Siman, he has basically dispelled the Kuzari's concept of a chosid. And he said that in Yiddishkeit, a chosid is not detached from the world. A chosid is part of the world. And that arouses his curiosity enormously. And he says in Siman Beis, Omar HaKuzari, that's the Kuzari talking now, the king. Im Kain, if that's the case, he says, Saper li maise hechosid shebochem hayoim. Explain to me, good, a contemporary chosid. What is he? Explain to me the essence of that, of a contemporary chosid. Omar Echove. So the Chover answers, the Talmid Chochem answers. So you'll see each paragraph is introduced either with an Omar HaKuzari, or Omar Echover. Either the Kuzari is talking or the Chover is talking. No. Just words it that way so as to construct his sefer. Omar Echover, Hechosid hu. The Chosid is as follows. Hanizhar bim dinosi. He's careful about his state, his country. Meshair u'mechalek l'chol anasheho tirfom v'chol sipukom. He calculates, he measures, and he dishes up to each of its people their income and their needs. V'yanig bohem betzedek, and he rules them righteously. Lo yoyne echod mehem, he does not oppress one single one of them. And he doesn't give a single one of them any more than is fit for them. And he And he finds that when he needs them, they are obedient to him. Memaharim la'anoisei be'es koroi. They are quick to answer him when he calls. Yetzavim v'yasu kemitzvosoi. He instructs them and they carry out his instruction. V'yazhirim v'yizoharu. And he warns them not to act in certain ways and they heed his warning. That's a chosid. It's a little different. If you look in the Sifrei HaChassidus, you'll find slightly different descriptions of a chosid. Omar HaKuzri, in the Kuzri, says, Al chosid sha'alticha lo yamoshel. Excuse me, Rebbe, he says, I asked you about a chosid, not about a ruler, not about a king. Explain to me what a chosid is. Omar HaChover says, a chosid hu mishuhu moshel. A chosid is a ruler. And if you want to understand the essence of Chassidus, examine the essence of statesmanship. And you'll find that they're exactly the same. What makes a good chosid are the same qualities as that which make a good statesman. And he goes on in the rest of that simon to explain the control that a chosid has over the various powers of his body. But now that the Kuzri has told us that, let us relearn Simon Gimel with this in mind. So a chosid, who he says, hanizhar bimdinosu. So number one, he compares all his powers and passions and talents and limbs to a medino, to a state. Each one in a state, every person and every community is independent, and yet they've got to function together as a state. What does he do? Meshaer u'mechalek l'chol anasheo tirfom. A good statesman. Not only does he give people their need, but the first thing he does is he estimates their needs. They don't decide what they need. He decides what they need. That's a good statesman. It's not democratic, but it's a good statesman. And then he gives them what they need. B'chol sipukum. V'yanhig bohem b'tzedek. But he's a benevolent dictator. There's absolute righteousness. Nobody at the expense of anybody else. Nobody has to pay for anybody else. Everybody gets what they need in accordance with what they need. The tzedek. Now that applies also with the human being. That we've got to give each of our passions and each of our needs what they need. And there has to be tzedek. There has to be righteousness in the way we handle ourselves. Lo yoyne echod mem. We mustn't depress ourselves or any part of ourselves. Every part of ourselves, we've often discussed that in the Tel Zerov. Every part of ourselves needs expression. And we've got to find the correct expression. We've got to rule over ourselves in a way where lo yoyne echod mem. We don't oppress part of ourselves. We channel ourselves. We direct ourselves, but we don't oppress ourselves. Lo yisem lo yoyse michel ko aroy lo. You don't give yourself more, any part of yourself more than that which is fitting. When you instruct your body to respond, it responds quickly. It's an immediate response. You instruct your body and it carries out the instruction. You warn your body and it heeds your warning. Do you notice in here also tones of that Rabbeinu Tam we learned a long time ago? That you've got to talk to yourself, you've got to instruct yourself. You mustn't see yourself as one being. If you see yourself as one being, you cannot motivate yourself. The essence of self-motivation is to see yourself as two beings, and you are two beings. You're an neshama and you're a guf. You're two beings, and the Rabbeinu Tam, you remember, said that the human being is the only bria in the whole olam who can be both subject and object simultaneously, where you can control yourself, guide yourself, educate yourself, teach yourself, elevate yourself. That's the only time where you can be subject and object. But you have to be subject and object. You've got to direct yourself. And the Kuzri follows the same system. That you've got to see yourself as a ruler, a dictator, and a state. All wrapped into one being. And it's a beautiful moshul because the state includes the ruler. What is a state? A state is not as something under a ruler. The ruler is part of the state, so if you look at the state, you just see one body. But when you take it to pieces, you see a ruler, and then all sorts of millions of different bodies all around it. And the ruler is where it all comes together. So it is with a human being. Millions of different koiches, all pulling in different directions, and a ruler. And one has to give a tzivu, you have to instruct yourself and command yourself, and you have to be able to find that your body responds to your commandments. Then you're a chosid. If your body doesn't respond to your commandments, mitken chosid. That's the definition of the Kuzri. And now he goes into details. Omar Echover, a chosid who mishu moishel, a chosid is one who rules. Nishma bechushov v'koychosov hanafshim v'hagufiyim. His chushim, that's his senses. Koychosov hanafshim, his spiritual powers, forces. Hagufiyim, and his physical forces, his physical drives. All of them nishma, all of them are obedient. Umanhigom hahanhogo hagufis. And he rules them physically. Kemoshe Ne'emar, as it says in the very pasuk that we learned last night, isn't it amazing how often this happens? Umoshe beruchoy miloched ir. That one who rules over a city is Umoshe beruchoy, one who rules over his ruach, over his own life forces, is more skilled in strategy than one who can capture a city. Remember, there's nothing that's coincidental. When this kind of thing happens, that last night we learn a posuk, or it would have been next week, but often the same, within a week, one learns a posuk which is the basis of the whole piece of Kuzri that we're going to be learning over the next few weeks. That's not a coincidence. That's the siyata dishmaya in learning, to come across the right things at the right time, to be led to the right things at the right time. And it's also a siman that we're learning the right things. It's a siman that the Ribbono Shel Olam approves of what we're learning. We'll be on the Golan on Shabbos afternoon and the Kuzri on Sunday morning. But it all forms a unit. V'hu ha-muchon le-memsholo. And such a person is fit to rule. What is leadership? Leadership is who is a leader? A leader is a person who excels in self-motivation. If he cannot motivate himself properly, if he cannot control himself, he's not ready to be an educator, and he's not ready to be a leader. The first requirement of leadership, the only requirement of leadership, if one can do it with oneself, you can do it with anybody else. It's hard to motivate people, but not quite as hard as it is to motivate oneself. And if a person can motivate oneself, he can motivate other people. And that really, I suppose, is the difference between people. Each sefer has a yesod on which it's constructed. The Chazon Ish, remember, constructed his sefer on the two types of people. The one who has undertaken to subject his life to the rigorous analysis of what's right and wrong, alpi aloche. And the other people who have not made that undertaking. That's how he divided humanity into two groups. The Kuzri divides humanity into two groups in a different way. A Moshel Beruchoy and one is not Moshel. One who can do what he wants and one who is unable to do what he wants. One who can do what he doesn't want, perhaps, is more correct, and one who cannot do what he doesn't want. A Moshel Beruchoy, the first requirement of leadership is the ability to motivate oneself. And since we're all leaders, we all have children that we're trying to lead, we have Chavrusas, we have Talmidim, we all employees, we all have some leadership role. Self leadership is the first requirement, the ability to simply do what you want to do. And one finds, strangely enough, that carries through in everything. I imagine it's the same in business and the professions. Those who are able to be self-motivated are successful in whatever they do. Those who are not self-motivated are not successful in anything they do. And in Torah it's certainly so. If you take the ones who do well, even in learning, like the ones who do well in learning, at the end of the day, it's the ones who are moshlim berucho, the ones who can keep to a seder, the ones who can set aside distractions, the one who can overcome difficulties. The other ones love moshlim berucho. We said the difference between people, as I said last night also, is not in whether they've got distractions, nor in how serious the distractions are. Because with few exceptions, the degree of seriousness of our distractions is all about the same. The difference between people is our ability to handle those distractions. That's all. If I'm Moshel Beruchoy, or you're not a Moshel Beruchoy. If you're not a Moshel Beruchoy, then whatever happens pushes you aside. This is a distraction this week, and that's a distraction next week, and it's always an onus, and it's always inevitable, and it's always something you can't do anything about, and it's illness, or it's work, or it's this crisis and that crisis. And week after week, month after month, year after year, the person goes on believing that salvation is around the corner. And soon there'll be no more distractions. He's just busy organizing. He's always busy organizing himself. I think I mentioned to you that one of the industries that makes the most money, I think, or one of the most successful industries, is this new industry, these time management industries. Diary systems and card systems and filing systems. Why is it so? Why has it become so? Because people love to believe that they're just getting themselves right, that they're busy organizing themselves. It's the most comforting feeling to believe that the chaos in your life is near to an end. And when you start writing, you make your notes and you make your cards and you put your things in and you're organizing yourself. Do you make such things, Mr. Saad?
Yes, that's for my
business. No, I'm saying, Adrab, you must make more. It's a wonderful business. Because there's nothing that people love so much as the illusion of getting themselves organized. What they don't realize is that organization is in the gavra, not in the chefza. There's no object that can organize you. You're either a Moshe Berucha or you're not a Moshe Berucha. And if you're not a Moshe Berucha, you can have all the diaries and all the cards and all the computers in the world, and you're still in a mess. But these things give one the illusion that, you know what, I'm just busy organizing myself. And you're making your lists, and now you feel all organized. But that doesn't mean you'll be at the shiur tomorrow. It doesn't mean that you'll do what you plan to do tomorrow. It doesn't mean that will come the end of the week, you'll look back with satisfaction and say, ah, this week I did what I had to do. No such thing. Not now, not next week, not the week after. And then these people decide, you know, I'm taking a holiday at the end of the year. 4-week holiday, and during those 4 weeks I'm going to do all these things I didn't have a chance to do. Comes the end of the holiday. No, how was the holiday? It was a wonderful holiday. Did you do all those things? Well, no, you know, it was after all a holiday, and one doesn't want to pressurize oneself. But this year, it's a much easier year, and I'll be able to do everything that I need to do. Comes all of a sudden, the first week of the year, he's just come back from holiday, so he's got a lot of catch up. The second week, he hasn't quite caught up yet. The third week, there's a crisis. The fourth week, he's ill. The fifth week, and he's on to another year of the rest of his life. And so goes v'chein. His portion is not a Moshe Beruchai. He's not a person who knows how to say yes and no to himself, how to instruct himself, and how to make jolly sure that he carries out his own instructions. Ain't a Moshe Beruchai. And such a person needs to accept the fact that his life is going to be a failure. When he's accepted that, he can relax. That's all. The tensions are only because he thinks that he's still going to make a success of his life, so he gets frustrated. Because he wants to make a success of his life, and he sees he's not doing it. So he gets frustrated, and he convinces himself that it's coming and coming. But that causes heart disease, because as you grow older, there's less and less time. And then the tension becomes more and more. He starts running out of time as he gets older. I haven't done it when I was 20, I couldn't do it. Now I'm 30, now I'm 40, 50, 60. How much time is there left to do it? And the tension becomes more and more and more. But if he just accepts, I'm going to be a failure, I'm not going to do anything that I set out to do. Comes 120 years, I'm going to be the same as I was as a child, in the same mess, in the same turmoil, in the same chaos, having achieved nothing. The moment you make peace with that, then you can relax. Then there's no pressure anymore, and then you're okay. But if one wants to achieve, there isn't another derech. One has to become a chosid, one has to become a moshul beruchu.
So is there any intermediary stage?
No, obviously there is an intermediate. There is an intermediate. These are the two poles. You've got people in between who are more or less. But basically you've got to divide the person into a Moshe Berucha, because you'll find then the next thing is people land up doing, in an intermediate stage, you land up doing the things which are least unpleasant first. That's a procrastinator. He does the things which are least unpleasant first, and he leaves the unpleasant things to last. What does that mean? Unpleasant things don't get done. The only tragedy of life is that most of the important things are unpleasant. They're routine. Sit down and learn a piece of Gemara. What's the most important thing? Is to go through it, Gemara, Rashi, read and translate 4, 5, 6 times. That's the first thing. That's the unpleasant part. So if you're sitting down to learn, first he goes over something he already knows, or he looks at this, and he pages here, and he pages there, and he'll do his Chazora tomorrow. And it never happens. So in a sense, yes, there are variances of a Moshe Beruchu, but Lamaisa there isn't. The most of the variance is just how much he finds pleasant and how much he finds unpleasant. But a Moshe Berucha is the one who says unpleasant things first. Let's get them out of the way. Once I've done the unpleasant things, then I will be self-motivated to do the pleasant things. That's the Moshe Berucha. One person eats the dessert first and then gets to the main course, and the other one eats the main course and then he gets to the dessert. Ki ilu hayom Moshe b'medina, for if he was ruling over a state, he would rule them righteously. Kasher Noag Begufa Venapshur. That same midah of Hanhoga that he has in ruling himself, he would apply to others. He would do it with fineness, with tzedek. V'chosam ha-koychos ha-mis'avim u'mono iso min ha-ribuy. And as in his private life, he would have blocked the drives of Taivo. Remember also the Vilna Gaon last night? And he would distract them from excesses. He would hold them back from excess. So he's not destroying those drives. He's not oppressing the drives. He's simply holding them down, away from excess. That's a good leader, not excess. Achar asher nosen lohem chelkom, provided he's given them that which they need. So we have certain drives. Every drive the Ribbono shel Olam has given us has a role, has a purpose, has a function. And it has to be given that which it needs, but not one bit more than that. V'hispik lohem mashi yamali chisroinom, and he's given them sufficient to fill their emptiness, their lacking. Mehamaychel hamaspik, enough food. V'hamishte hamaspik, enough drink. Al haderech hashove, in a balanced way. V'arechitzo v'chol tzorcheo al haderech hashove gamken. And he's gone to, he's washed himself correctly, al haderech hashove, in a balanced way. V'chosam ha-koychus ha-ka'asonim ha-mevakshim lintzeach, and the aggressive drives, isn't this amazing, the ka'asonim, the ta'avonim, that the aggressive drives also, he has given as much as they need, he's held them back. Achashe nosun lehem chelkom, having given them their needs, even aggression has needs. V'nitzochoin ha-mo'il b'divrei ha-chochmos v'hadeus. Where does aggression come in? In victory over in matters of chokhmah. The garos ha-anoshim ha-royim, and the disapproval of bad people. And I want to spend just a moment on these two things. Aggression. Kaas. The Kuzari learns, unlike the Rambam, that kaas has a place and needs to be used. The Rambam is only prepared to go as far as saying there are times when you've got to pretend to be angry. But not that you're ever allowed to be angry, actually. The Kuzari says no. The Vilna Gaon goes, we had it earlier actually, where the Vilna Gaon says that you use kaas against yourself. But sometimes that's where aggression needs to be used. Sometimes you've got to use aggression against yourself. That's its place. The Kuzari has an important chidush here. He says that the kaasoni, aggression, needs to be used in two areas. Number one, benitzochin hamoil bedivrei hachochmus, in what the Tel Zerov calls tkifus hadas, the ability to fight for a point if you believe it's emes, to fight until the end and not to move. If one doesn't have any aggression, one gets persuaded too easily, and in Torah one can't afford that. If one holds by something and one's gone through it, and a person has been unable to convince you that you're wrong, and you've satisfied that you've gone through as far as you're able, and what you're saying and what you're learning is in accordance with what your Rabbein taught you, and nobody has been able to prove to you otherwise, but there's enormous pressure on you, you need the koyach ha-kaasoni, you need aggression to hold your ground. Because if it's emes, you dare not give in one iota. Other people disagree, good. So they've got from their Rabbein, they also think there's nothing wrong with that. But you can't give in just because they're forcing you to give in, just because they're pressurizing you to give in. They've got to show you that you're wrong, or your Rabbeim have to tell you that you're wrong. But you can't have a situation where you're learning in accordance with what you were taught, and you're satisfied with it and happy with it, but just because all the people around you go a little bit differently, all of a sudden you're going to go off on a tangent, which is not you. It's not your school of thought, it's not the way you were trained, it's not your background, it's just not you. That you can't do. There's got to be kasoni. There's got to be the kach to be able to remain firm. I remember the first time I came to see my brother when he was learning at Brisk, and he was getting on so well with Rav Meir Soloveitchik. I saw him with his chaverim. I couldn't understand this relationship. All his chaverim looked like Briskers. They all wore the same clothes, and they all wore the same hats, and they all had the same length beards, and they all talked the same. You could see it from a mile away that they were Briskers. My brother looked like group of people, he looked like from the moon. He had no beard. He wore light-colored suits. He wore a gray hat, not a black hat. It just didn't make sense. So that, okay, fine, that wasn't a kasha. But that of all the people that enjoyed an intimate relationship with Reb Meir, he was the only one. So eventually I asked him, I never had the courage to ask Reb Meir about it, but I asked him about it. And he said, and I believe he's right, now that I know Reb Meir, I believe he's right. He said, that's exactly what Reb Meir appreciates. What is bris? Kifus Adas is the whole thing. It's exactly what he appreciates, not an imitation. That's exactly what he respects. And that's the use of aggression, bedivrei hachochmos v'hadayis, both within Torah and between Torah and the rest of the world. A person who within Torah can't hold his ground will not hold his ground outside of Torah either. A person who, let's say, he comes into a brisket thing, so all of a sudden he becomes a brisket. A couple of months later he's among Hasidim, all of a sudden he's wearing a gatel. Then he's somewhere else. Whatever the pressures are, that's what he is. His Rebbe taught him something. The Olam says something else, so he says what the Olam goes. He isn't able to fight his ground. What will happen if such a person finds himself into Reform Jews, in an environment of Freyayin, in an environment of Goyim? What's he going to do then? Remain Frum? Of course not. If that Tkifus Hadas is absent in Torah, the Tkifus Hadas will be absent outside of Torah too. And that's very important in our learning of Gemara. One learns and you hear and you see, good, you've got to try and understand. But in a Chavrusa, you battle the thing out. You don't allow yourself to be steamrolled. You've got to be shown. You've got to feel satisfied that you understand why that is the correct shot. It's not good enough just to be told that's the way to learn it. One has to understand it. That's the use of aggression in Divrei HaChochmos. And the other one is in Garas HaAnoshim HaRoim. Where there are bad people, one needs to be Goer, one needs to be Moche. One needs to use one's aggression against those bad people. Now in the Olam HaTorah today, in the contemporary Torah world, you find these two things lacking, unfortunately. The taking a stand against bad people, lacking. I'm not talking about bad people outside. That's easy. Bad people outside is easy. But bad people inside. It has to be the Chumrah. We don't do this. That won't be allowed. That won't be tolerated. There has to be a use of aggression against bad people. When it comes to that, you'll say to a person, in Ben Torah, you'll say once, so-and-so, he's a Baal Machlokes. Yes, he's a Baal Machlokes. So why don't you step on the table and make a fuss about it? Why are you machanif to him? Shalom, you know, shalom, shalom, shalom. All of a sudden it's big shalom. You ask a person why he's changing so quickly, why is the way you're acting, is that the way your Rabbeim taught you? No, but the Olam does it this way and I don't want to stand out. Shalom, shalom. All of a sudden, a big shalom. So what's he using? His Koach HaKasoni is not getting expression. His aggression is not getting expression. So where does his aggression get expression? Sometimes against his wife, sometimes against his parents, sometimes against outside people, sometimes against good people. Because to banish aggression altogether, that one can't do. It has been created to be used. And if it's not used in the proper place, it's going to break out in an improper place. And these are the proper places. One uses one's aggression to be oymed al dato, to have a certain stubbornness, a certain intellectual stubbornness, not a stubbornness which doesn't allow one to see. There's a difference between being dogmatic and being intellectually stubborn. There's a big difference between those two. One isn't permitted to be dogmatic. But to be intellectually stubborn where you haven't been proved anything, that one has to be able to be omed al adas no matter what the forces are, and to be goyer ba'anoshim roim, those are the areas where aggression has to be used and has to be used properly.